Welcome to the Original Recipe Group Big Book Step Study. Broadcasting from Newcastle, PA, every Monday night from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Easter on Zoom.
Also a former pill popper, cokehead at one time, you name it, I did it. I am so honored to be here, and I want to thank TK and Diana as well. And actually my husband, who is game for just about anything, and I pretty much just go along for the ride. I would like to start this meeting by just asking the Holy Spirit if he would please soften any hearts that are holding on to resentment, to fear, to pride, and to let that go as you listen tonight to what we have to say, because what this process has done for us has been truly transformative, and we would want the same things for you. And I know that I spent a whole lot of time before I got here trying every other means available to get well. I grew up as a child, I knew there was something wrong with me. I knew I was a bully. I knew I thought the whole world was against me. I thought the world was cruel. I had a very antagonistic relationship with everybody. And I would fight you if you looked at me the wrong way. I had a lot going on there very early on. And very early on, I started trying to read things like self-help books to try to figure out, maybe, I'm miserable. What can I do to change this? I spent 25 years off and on in therapy. And it wasn't like joke therapy, it wasn't some like ham and egger. Like I was going to challenge you. So like I had good therapists that I was working with, and I still couldn't get to the point where I really actually wanted to live any longer. I just didn't. I'm like, my life is unmanageable and I don't want to live it. And, my relationship with God was like, please take me. I hate this. Please take me now, please. And I went from having that attitude to, well, first of all, I did know that I had addiction problems even by high school. I wrote in my yearbook that 20 years from there, where are you going to be in the year 2000? And I wrote, I'm going to be an AA counselor for everybody I went to high school with. It's in my yearbook. It's in my yearbook. Oh. You know why? It was in my yearbook because I was so smug and condescending and full of pride, because I had been on the wagon for 9 months. Who goes on the wagon in high school? That's how bad you have to be to be like on the wagon in high school, right? And so I knew that I had a problem, but I, would show people up and be like, see, I got this. Look at you. You're drinking. I'll take you home. I'm good. But that was cockiness. That was pride. That was smugness. And, all bets were off when I turned about 20. I'd finished a year or so of college, took a year off because my dad had terminal cancer. And I too was an oldest child. And as soon as my dad had cancer, my sobriety, all bets were off, because that was gone. That gave me a reason to drink and drug like I had never drank and drugged before. And it was a shame, because my father and I was his favorite. I was the oldest. I was his favorite of the six kids in the family. He had a terrible, my mother was awful to him. So, she was jealous of my relationship with him. But towards the end, between the coke and the pills and the booze and everything, he would be sitting there with an oxygen tank with tumors that you could see, you know, kind of bulging out of his skull. And he was like, I'll throw your stuff out on the street. So I went from having this great relationship with my dad to ruining it as he was dying. And that was something that I held on to for a while. That ruined me. And I spiraled down, had a DUI when I was 23, and I started going to Open AA. I didn't know there was anything else. I admitted I was an alcoholic. But after about a year and a half, I lost my craving. And I thought that was it. I'm like, I'm good, because I saw people. And no, you know, I did get physical sobriety from being in Open AA. Okay. I did. And I did meet some nice people in Open AA. But I also saw a lot of people who had 30 years of sobriety who were really not nice people. That I'm like, I thought you're supposed to be happy because you're not drinking and you're not doing drugs. And I kind of went, well, I don't feel the need. I don't feel the urge to like drink or do drugs anymore. So I guess I'm good. So after about 2 years, I stopped going to AA, and I did okay for a while. But the problem was I didn't have any skills for handling life on life's terms. I had no skills. So, you know, a few years later, I was in a relationship and wasn't going well, and started drinking, and it led to me getting pregnant, and I stopped drinking again because I was pregnant. And in my sick mind, I'm like, well, I got to make this whole thing right. I got to make this relationship right. And I married the guy. Not sound thinking. This was all based on fear. This was based on trying to cover up and make up for things from the past. And married the guy. We had three kids. It was not a good fit. There were red flags everywhere, but I ignored them. And so I also wanted to be a good mom. So knowing that I've got a drinking problem and I want to be a good mom, I white knuckled it for a lot of years. I was sober a lot of years. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't one of these moms that just was kind of like, you know, waking up with a hangover and just trying to, I was a good mom. But there was a white knuckle element to it. I overdid everything. So I transferred my addiction from drugs and alcohol to trying to be the perfect wife, mother, house cleaner, cook, also have a job. So I overworked myself. That was one of the things that I did, was I was always busy. You wanted somebody to do it, you asked me, I'd get it done. So there was that. I also overexercised. You know, I would go out, I'd be out, you know, banging out 10 miles, and then do what used to be like P90X, and then I'd lift weights, and then I'd do this, to the point where in the past few years, because I overexercised so much, I now have two titanium hips. Okay. So that's the kind of thing. You'll find that other people who haven't done this process that I've done and that he's done will transfer. Sometimes they'll have, you know, physical sobriety, but they'll transfer it to something else. Overexercising, overworking, overeating, gambling, porn, sex, relationships. Mm-hmm. Like there's a plethora of plenty of other things that you can transfer that addiction to. But at some point in time, when the poop hits the fan, you're going to come back to that thing because you don't want to be here and you don't want to be living in this world the way that you are. So when that happened, I finally found, so the marriage fell apart. Okay. At that point in time, 25 years of therapy off and on, when it was falling apart, I started to develop anxiety, depression, PTSD, and I couldn't sleep. Now, I'm working two jobs. I'm working about 70 hours a week. Just, you know, to keep food on the table because it's not a functioning relationship and I don't want to be home anyway. So that's going on. But because I have all of those issues that have been diagnosed, now I have a prescriber. And for each one of those four items, I was given four different pills. Okay. Because one wasn't working. Here I am. I'm going to therapy. I want to fix things. Here's another pill. This pill doesn't seem to be working. Well, we're going to add on to that. Here's a booster for that. And that's what led me back into drinking. I was led back into drinking by the fact that I'd been taking the pills. I'm trying to go to therapy to get better, to get off the pills. The pills aren't working. The therapy's not really working. So I'm going to start having a glass of wine to boost the effect of the pills. Not only that, this person that I had married at some point in time, because the pills weren't working, I'd run out before the end of the month. So him being in the construction business, he had plenty of people that he could go out and get pills for me, additional pills to so I could make it to the end of the month. So essentially, I was married to my dealer. And that didn't work. And so it kind of came, got me back into drinking again. I was able on my own. I did challenge my therapist. I'm like, what's the end game with this? Because this isn't working for me here. And I finally weaned myself off the pills, but I still had a problem. So less pills, but now there's more alcohol and I'm getting divorced. And with that came a whole lot of freedom that I didn't have before. My house went from having seven people in it to 6 months later, me being alone in a 4,000 square foot house with a dog. And so that gave me plenty of opportunity to be woe is me. Which takes me to, I get to be, so here I am, 54 years old. Freshly divorced, and I realized that I had a drinking problem again. And I tried going into I was going to a hospital for my nerves, and they said, you're on benzos and you're drinking. No, we're sending you to a detox. That's where you're going. You're going to a detox, honey. I was like, what? And then I came out and I started doing AA. And I did 90 and 90. I did 90 and 90 because this is all I knew. And I was like chasing meetings. But then I reached a point and I talked to somebody that I was friendly with in the Newport, Rhode Island area. And I'm like, my life can't be just chasing around church basements to hang out with other people so that I don't go out to a bar or I'm not home alone with my bottle of tequila or like that can't be it. And she's like, I know what you need. You need Big Book Step Study. I was like, okay. So I started. I started Big Book Step Study. And I started writing. I got to the writing part. Great. Wonderful. And I was starting to really feel relief in doing the writing that like it was letting off a pressure valve that I wasn't even able to get out of therapy. Okay. The pressure valve from therapy was dealing with that week's crap or who pissed me off that week, who slighted me, who said the wrong thing to me. But doing the fourth step, I was noticing, oh, I'm getting a little more relief. I'm feeling pretty good. And then COVID hit. And meetings seemed to, they stopped. And my sponsor seemed to ghost me. And within 3 months, I had another DUI. And even though it was 32 years after the first one, the Registry of Motor Vehicles treated it like a second. Okay. And so it was during COVID. So you weren't going to go to court I did not go to court and have my day in court for 2 years. Okay. So I was in limbo with no license for 2 years, even just dealing with that. Which goes to show you that if you have an addiction problem, even if you've had years of sobriety or whatever, the problem always gets worse, never better. It is a progressive situation. And the question you have to ask yourself before you even do this work is like, have I reached my bottom? Am I done with this? Am I done with living this way? Do I want to be happy? Or is this it? Is this all I've got? And so I knew after the DUI, I couldn't drive. I was potentially going to lose my job. I was a teacher. And I, like, everything was just about to go. I was thinking I'm going to probably end up becoming homeless. And I said, well, I'm just going to give this program a try again. And sure enough, I found people. It was amazing. The people in this program in the Big Book Step Study are amazing. I had people supporting me, surrounding me, who were amazing. I never missed a day of work, and I couldn't drive for 2.5 years. I never missed a day of work. My bosses at work did not know that I could not drive, that I had had a DUI during the summer. They had zero clue, because I had people who were there for me, because that's what this program does. It teaches you to live by certain principles, meaning if you say you're going to do something, you do it. So I had people around me that I could trust that were going to pick me up at my place at 6:30, 6:45 in the morning, and take me to my job every single day for 2.5 years. That in itself was a miracle. Okay. When my whole life blew up after I had the DUI, I also had four lawyers attacking me for money from different angles. Divorce, Department of Revenue, IRS, all this stuff, divorce related stuff from before, the DUI, the whole bit. It all got cleared up. Why? Because I kept it simple. I just said, I'm going to do the next right thing. I am not looking ahead. I'm not looking ahead at what could happen here. I don't know. I just know that I need to stay focused on right now and do the next right thing. Because my life had become completely unmanageable. I was willing to admit that. That is part of the first step. That's the second half of the first step. I also knew that the writing portion had given me some kind of relief, and I needed to get the full relief. There's a saying by Socrates that an unexamined life is not one worth living. So that was, I have never found a more truer statement in my life, because it's like I hadn't really fully examined my life. I had therapists who were kind of trying to give me some ideas about it, but me personally examining my life, getting over everything that happened in it, and moving and being finally able to move forward, that to me was the thing that I needed to do. So what happened when I did this process? Because again, going back to my statement, I didn't want to live. I did not want to live. I think I was looking for ways to like die of alcohol poisoning, accidentally, die in a car accident, whoops, accidentally. I don't feel that way anymore. Okay. I don't, and I also don't feel like I need to over-exercise or fill my life with stuff. I can be quiet and alone with my thoughts. And it's because my thoughts got straightened out, because a lot of the monsters that were in my subconscious, that were in the back of my head, they got taken out by doing this work. That's what this work does. It takes out all those monsters, those demons, those things you're ashamed of, those things that disgusted you, gets them out, and it gives them and it brings them to light, and they lose their power over you. They lose their grip over your life completely. I found that when I did that, it gave me a new sense of freedom. And I also felt like I looked at the world in a different way. So I wasn't looking at you as if you're going to screw me over or this is a situation. I could take, and this is the beauty of being an addict, okay? I looked at my addiction instead of being the biggest curse. And I looked at it now as the biggest gift that I have. Because what is a gift? It's something that you give to other people. So like for me, if I go to look at a gorgeous sunset and I'm all alone and I don't have that to share with somebody else, it's not the same. Or if I give you a gift and you never open it, it's not the same. Well, I have the gift of all the horrible crap that I did and I went through in my life. That's now a gift that I get to share with somebody else when I'm helping them, because I can say, they can say, yeah, I got raped or I got molested or whatever, and this happened. And I'll be like, you too, huh? That happened to you? Oh, you went through that too? Oh, okay. And they're like, I'm not the only one. And it's like, no, you're not. And you listen to other people and you get sponsees and you listen to other sponsees. And it's like your story, maybe a couple of little facts are different. But the basic thing is we're all the same. We all make the same mistakes. You know, we all screw up in the same ways. We all have the same hangups, the same problems, pretty much. And when you're able to share those things with other people and they don't feel like I'm a freak, there's no way to fix me, I'm terminally unique. And you actually take out that box of crap that you did and you go, yeah, you're not. And we can fix you because I know how to do it because I did it. That's a gift. And that's something that worth sharing with, I don't know. I mean, the biggest joy in my life has been watching people transform their lives, watching them transform their attitudes and being excited about life. I'm excited about life today. Me, who for 54 years hated being alive, asked to be taken out, was thinking, you know, tried pills, tried other ways to kind of roll off into the sunset. I was too chicken to, or whatever. I don't even know what the reason was, but I had strong religious inclinations that kept me from taking myself out, but I wanted out. And I love life now, and I love helping people. And that's actually part of the reason, you know, life is tough. It's tough. So, you know, I might be having a good day. I help him out. He might be having a good day. He lifts me up. We lift up somebody else. Like that's what we're here for, is to help each other out. So like, if you're new here, you're more valuable as a person by asking somebody to help you to go through this process to somebody like me who's been through this process, because I get to do my job of helping you. I get to fill my role in this world by being a help and trying to see. And the reality is, when you watch people change, it's a miracle. It literally is a miracle. You watch miracles happen. When I came into this program, I didn't say two words to anybody. I gave you a look. If I looked at you at all, it was with like like razor blade eyes, like I wanted to kill you. Like, don't effing talk to me. I am not here to be your friend. I just want to fix this and get the F out. Like, that was my attitude. I didn't want to talk. If you were lucky, if I said two words to you, I probably had a scowl on my face. And that is true of everybody that starts the process. And when they get out, it's like this miracle. It's like you've got people that have big smiles on their faces, that want to hug you, that want to know about you, that want to hear your story, and they want to help you. So if you are contemplating this, if you are sick and tired of being sick and tired, there is a different way. There is a different way of looking at the world. It doesn't have to be the grind. You can really enjoy it and experience life again. And I'll leave you with that. So thank you.